Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, good evening. Welcome to another episode of All About Service Dogs, hosted by your host, yours truly, Doc Venzel. Tonight, we will be featuring Chad Mackin. He might say Mackin, we'll find out in a minute. And Chad is the owner over at Pack the Basics. And we are going to hear from Chad, and we're going to pick his brain a little bit, see what he's doing over there, and how we might be able to get involved with what he is doing. So, Chad, go ahead, greet the people, and let us know just a little bit about your business.
Well, I'm a professional dog trainer. I've been training dogs professionally for just about 23 years now. I'm located in the northwest suburbs of Chicago, but I spend several weekends a year traveling around the country and actually even around the world teaching workshops for other dog trainers. As a matter of fact, I woke up this morning in Tucson, Arizona, and now I'm back in Chicago. So I just did a two-day workshop there in Tucson.
Well, super duper. So that makes you a little traveling trainer.
That's time, Jeff.
Okay, well, good. That helps us get a little idea of who Chad is now. Did I pronounce Mackin right, or is it Mackin?
It's Mackin. You pronounced it correctly.
Okay, great.
I appreciate that.
I don't want to be out here just mispronouncing people's names. That is just rude. Okay, look here. So tell us a little bit about 24 years ago or further back before you were actually into dog training. What got you interested in dog training and how did you pursue it?
Well, I've loved dogs my entire life. My whole life I've loved dogs, and looking back on my life, every dog that I had growing up ended up dying because of a behavior problem of some sort. Whether that means they got out and got hit by a car, or they had some sort of behavior problem that my family didn't know how to solve effectively, and they either got rid of the dog or euthanized the dog. So I grew up seeing the results of not being able to train dogs. Like, you know, we were good people. We just didn't know what to do. And dog training was not what it is today. Like, I can remember we had a Doberman that my brother took through a 6-week obedience class. And it taught the dog how to heel, sit, stay, and lie down. But it didn't teach her not to run in the road. And, one morning she got out the fence and, got hit by a car. And so you just didn't have the access to behavioral solutions that you have now, and you didn't have the access to the information that's available now. So it was something that I always loved dogs. And to be honest, when I got into it, I did not intend to make it a career. It was something I thought I could do for a while I figured out where I was going to end up in life. And it just fit. So as to how I pursued it, again, it was, I was looking for a job. I had to, back in the day, you used to get the paper and you're looking at the want ads, right? Before we had the internet. So, I had the paper out, one morning I spread out on the table, circling ads, people I was going to call later. And there was some guy who was teaching, he had this ad in there, earn big money, become a dog trainer. And, of course, come to this free seminar. Of course, the free seminar was a sales presentation for his professional dog trainers course. And, he convinced me that it was worth spending some money on signing up for, even though I didn't have a job. And it was a good thing I didn't have a job, because the fact that I was owed him money, because that was the first loan I ever took. The first loan I ever took was to become a dog trainer. And because I had that debt that I had to pay off, that motivated me to get out there and hustle and earn, get the business and earn, the money back that I owed the guy. But it wasn't a great course. I wasn't qualified at the end of the course to be a professional dog trainer, and I didn't figure that out till years later. But my whole life since then has been pursuing more and more knowledge about dogs and dog training, and just trying to learn everything I can. So that's how it started.
Okay, I'm enjoying the symphony of your kennel behind you, and I don't know if everybody else is hearing that or not, but do you kennel dogs, or are those your personal dogs I'm hearing? Or
I'm at work right now. I work for a company here in the northwest suburbs called DePaul Canine Campus. It's in Geneva, Illinois, and it's a full-service boarding kennel, and they're just settling the dogs in for the night right now, so this is not the best time, but they should be quieting down pretty soon, I think.
Oh, okay. So you do your own training and you travel for training, but you also have, and I'm putting in quotes, a 9-to-5, if you will, of a regular job, probably for the benefits and whatnot.
Well, you know, to be honest, I don't like teaching the seminars and the workshops. That's something that's about the level of business acumen I can handle. Like, I don't want to be a business owner. Like, I'd much rather be an employee, because a lot of dog trainers I know, they spend a lot more time doing business than they do training dogs, and I prefer to train dogs as much as I can. So with the workshops I do, the primary work is doing the workshops. You know, I spend a few hours a week doing organizational stuff, but I show up at the workshop, I teach, and I love it. So here, I'm the dog trainer. I'm not a manager. I don't deal with hiring and firing. I don't deal with, you know, payroll or any of that other stuff. I come in, I train my dogs, I deal with my clients, I help out, I help train the daycare staff. And if there's a trouble, if the kennel's having trouble with a dog, the kennel staff's going, this dog is trying to bite us, or this dog won't come out of the kennel, or whatever, I help them through that stuff. But generally speaking, everything I do all day here is dog training related and not business related. And I like it that way. I prefer it that way. Some people love the business side of it. Myself, I just like to get, I like to work with the dogs. That's what I love to do. So I've set up myself in a way where I get to do more of that than anything else. So it keeps me happy.
That makes good sense, and as a organizational leader who is a trainer and loves training, I hear what you're saying, because, I mean, so often we get overburdened with the business and the management and all that, and you don't get to spend your time with the animals. The people, the reason why you got into the business to start with. And so I really do understand what you're talking about. I on purpose myself set up to where I can train the owners to train. So I'm still getting to work with the dog and several different dogs as I'm working with the owners. And, you know, that works for me. That gets my juices going. And so I really understand and can appreciate what you're talking about. Now, do me a favor and describe Pack to Basics with me, or to me.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so Pack to Basics is actually the name of the branded name of my dog training approach. It started out with my socialization workshop is where the name came from. So I teach a workshop on, it's called Advanced Socialization Solutions for Difficult Dogs. And I started that workshop, first one in 2007, and it's evolved a lot. But it was based largely off of the things I learned from Dick Russell, who was a dog trainer in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and one of my mentors. It was an idea that he took from a guy in Spain named David Klein. And, it's essentially off-leash socialization dogs. And it's not, that doesn't sound like such a big deal anymore. But back when he was doing it and when I started doing it, it was, dog trainers freaked out about it. It was considered to be the most irresponsible and reckless thing that a dog trainer had ever done. Because we use this off-leash socialization to help dogs who have known socialization issues, dog aggression, as it was more commonly called back then, help them get over it by giving them opportunities to interact with dogs relatively free from human interference. And it's a pretty amazing process. And, you know, when I visited Dick's place and saw it for the first time, I was a skeptic. I went there to rule it out. Like, he had said, basically, come here and see, because I was telling him he was crazy. I was telling him it was dangerous. I was telling him there's no way I was asking him about a dog I was working with. And I said, there's no way this dog's going to succeed there. He's just going to get hurt, or somebody else is going to get hurt. This dog is, you don't understand the dog I'm dealing with, is what I told him. And he said, well, just come see. So I took a trip over to Baton Rouge. I was located in Houston, Texas at the time. So I took a trip over to Baton Rouge. I saw what he was doing, and I just said, I got to have this. I got to do this thing. I've got to find a way to get this for my clients, because it was. The minute he said take the leashes off, I knew I was seeing something that was unique and powerful and impressive. And as we walked around his field and he was pointing out dogs, he'd say, that dog came for dog aggression, and that dog came for dog aggression, and that dog over there, he's killed 3 dogs before, and nothing's going wrong. It was beautiful. It was beautiful. And so, you know, Dick was in his 60s when I met him. And I made several trips out there to his place and spent, you know, many afternoons on his porch drinking sweet tea, talking dogs. And when I saw an article in Off Lead magazine, and whoever wrote the article was complaining about dog trainers using group class dogs essentially as bait for dog reactivity, and how irresponsible that was. And I called Dick up. I said, did you read this article? And he said, yeah. And I said, someone needs to get out there. You need to get out there and teach what you're doing. And he said, well, someone needs to do it, but I'm too old, so you're the guy. So he gave me his, you know, he put that responsibility on my shoulders to get out there and teach this skill set. And so I've worked very hard to try and be worthy of that trust that he put in me. And I think I've done a pretty good job. But that was the first workshop I taught. But the interesting thing is that as I was watching the dogs interact in this socialization setting, it changed the way I handled dogs as a trainer. It changed the way I read dogs. It changed the way I interpreted dog behavior. And if you watch it with an open eye, it has to, right? You're seeing dogs behaving as they would if they didn't know the trainer or the handler or, you know, the owner was watching. You're seeing what they would do on their own, and you begin to see that a lot of things that I had believed were absolute truths were not only in many cases misinterpretations, but many of them were just absolutely dead wrong. And it changed the way I reacted to dogs who were, you know, disobedient. It changed the way I taught dogs. It changed the way I reacted, especially to aggression issues. And as I started going around teaching the workshops, I was handling a lot of dogs, and I started to get a lot more questions about the handling that I was doing when I had the dog on a leash. Why did you do this? Why didn't you do this? I got more questions about that than I did about the socialization. So that urged me to create a second workshop that I called Dogmanship, which is, I say, it's the lessons I learned from socialization applied to the leash. And that's a popular workshop too. So I have 2 workshops that I'm doing right now that are popular, I think I'm very happy to do them. I enjoy doing them, and I enjoy meeting trainers. And I enjoy helping dogs, and it's just, you know. So I don't know if that's what you're looking for, but that's how that came about.
Hey, I'm not looking. I'm like a gold miner. I start digging, and hey, we'll see what comes out of the ground. And then
when we get
something good, we refine it, and hey, look what I found. But so who would you say your primary client would be?
For dog training or for workshops?
Either way.
For dog training, you know, I focus almost exclusively on the pet dog market. I spent a month with Martin Dealey learning about gun dog stuff, and that month basically taught me that I need more than like 5 months to learn gun dog stuff, probably more like a year. So I know enough to get in trouble, but not enough to get out of it. So I've learned some protection work. I've learned some scent work. I've learned some, you know, some ring sport stuff a little bit. I could train a dog to a competition obedience routine if I wanted to, but I don't enjoy that work. So fundamentally what I spend my time doing is helping people's pet dogs become better family members. And that's what I love to do. So that's my primary client is anybody who has a dog that they're having a problem with, or they just want to be a little bit better behaved. Those are the guys we're looking for. Those are the people that we help. And, you know, and the problems range anywhere. Before I called into you guys, I just was helping a couple who had been, they'd been doing a lot of marker training with the dogs and before they got to me. And I don't have a problem with marker training, but the style of marker training that they'd been doing was leading to some behavior problems. And, unfortunately, the trainers that they were working with didn't quite know how to undo those behavior problems. So they contacted me, and we've been clearing up some of the issues that were created. And it was not that the training was bad; it was just that there was you know an unexpected side effect that came along that they didn't know how to deal with. So we put our thinking caps on, and we came up with some stuff, and we're still working it out. But it's getting better. And that's one of the things that I'm really happy about is that I have that ability because I know dogs. I may not know a lot about marker training. I may not know a lot about gun dog work. I may not know a lot about ring sport work or competition obedience. But there's been a few times in my life where people who do those things have hired me to help troubleshoot a problem that they didn't know how to solve. I've had competition obedience trainers come to me and ask me to help them get their dog to be more confident for the Stanford examination. I don't teach a Stanford exam. I don't do it. I've never taught it to a AKC standard, but I had a dog who was taught how to do it, but was a little, you know, fearful when the judge came up. So they called me it was just like, do you think you could help with that? I said, well, I can try. And I told them that if I didn't help, they wouldn't have to pay me. Just see what we can do. And, that dog ended up doing great. Last year, maybe the year before, I had a guy call me up, a retriever trainer. And he said, I got this retriever who's doing this and the same thing. I'm like, you know your sport better than I do, but if you want to come play with dogs for an hour or so and we'll talk, see what we can come up with, that's great. We put our heads together. And because, you know, dogs are dogs, right? You know, it's like what work. I mean, they're all different. They're all individuals. Don't get me wrong, but dogs are dogs. If you understand dogs, you can understand troubleshooting. As long as you know specifically what we're looking for, then we figure out how to do it, right? So, and since so much of what I do is centered around problem solving, my dog is chewing the furniture, my dog is barking too much, my dog is running away, whatever. Since so much of what I do is centered around problem solving, most of my career has been spent on how to adjust behaviors rather than how to teach behaviors, which is what most people in the working dog world focus on primarily, is how to teach behaviors. And that's awesome. It's just a different area of focus. I mean, I teach behaviors. I teach sit. I teach stay. I teach recalls. I teach all that stuff. But people don't call me because they want a better heel. They call me because their dog is being a jerk. Right. So I get them to do obedience as part of my protocol, but when you have a dog that's already got obedience, already has a high level of training, they have the impulse control that's required to do a sport, now it's getting into refining, and that's a large portion of what I do too, not so much in the precision end, but if the dog is having an unexpected reaction to the environmental situation, that's where I shine, that's where my bread and butter is, so it's kind of nice to be able to help out other professionals that way, because I always get to learn a little something about what they do in the process. So that helps a lot.
Okay. I'm taking notes here, and so I know when to come back and how to come back at this one and that one. Question I have for you is, on which end of the leash do you work the most?
I don't know if I can answer that question. I mean, I think it's equal, but it's different. I mean, are you asking me, like, how I'm interpreting that question is where do I spend most of my time concentrating, on the dog or the handler? Is that the question?
Pretty much.
Yeah. It depends on the program. If people are in private lessons, often I end up being more of a coach than a dog trainer. In group class, certainly I'm more of a coach than a dog trainer. But I also do boarding trains where first I train the dog, then I train the owners. And I do daily trainings, which is kind of in between. The dog gets dropped off in the morning and picked up in the afternoon for training. And then once the dog is trained, I teach the owners. So I'm comfortable in both modalities, but they're very different. You know, sometimes if I have a dog, like I had a dog at the workshop this weekend that I couldn't get near, because oddly enough, he was reactive only when his mom was around. If his mom had been gone, I would have been able to get near him, but because she had the leash, I couldn't get near him. So I had to coach her through a lot of stuff. And that's something I do spend a lot of time on learning. I spend as much time learning teaching skills as I do training skills. And I honestly think that's something that dog trainers miss out on. A lot of dog trainers are great trainers and sometimes mediocre teachers, or in some cases, terrible teachers. And I think that to succeed in this, industry, to be a benefit to your community, you have to be strong in both areas. You might be a better trainer than a teacher, or a better teacher than a trainer, but you've got to be strong in both areas. And I think that many trainers don't put the time into the teaching aspect of it that they should, and you know they suffer for it. The clients suffer for it, and the dogs suffer for it. So I really am a big advocate. I tell people all the time in my workshops, or even on, you know, my Facebook groups or whatever, that's a teaching problem. If I can get your dog to do something and you can't get the dog to do the same thing, then I have not taught you correctly. There's only one person to blame for that, you know. I'm the teacher. If I didn't teach you correctly, if I taught you correctly, you'd be doing it correctly. If I didn't, if you're not, then I didn't teach you correctly. And so it's a lot of both.
Okay. I like the way you answered that. Basically, if you're going to teach and train to the problem, then sometimes the problem is on one end of the leash, sometimes the problem is on the other end of the leash. So you have to be able to figure out which end it's on and do your situation from there.
Sure.
Go ahead.
People come in a lot of times and they'll say things like, I know this is my fault. And I don't like that. I don't like the blaming part of that. I'm very happy that people come in and they say they understand that their behavior is part of the problem, but I don't like that they're blaming themselves. So what I always tell them is, look, you're certainly an ingredient in this cocktail, but you're not the whole cocktail. Right, we got to fix all the ingredients, not just you. And I think that's very important that we look at it's a relationship, right? Just like you go to the marriage counselor, you don't go to the marriage counselor so they can tell you, so that the therapist can tell you that your wife is wrong, right? You go there to figure out what you can work on. But at the same time, if you're the only one working, if you're the one trying to get better, it's not going to work. So the dog has to get better. The client has to get better. In any training contract, there's two learning curves. There's your learning curve, and there's the client's learning curve, and there's the dog's learning curve. And our job as trainers is to manage both those learning curves and get them on the same trajectory. And if we can do that, we'll succeed. If we can't, we'll just end up frustrated.
So true, so true. Now, going back to the whole problem-solving thing, And hearing what you said about how that part of your business is working, say a person comes to you and what they need is a trainer, behaviorist, what have you, to help them because they're trying to owner train a service dog. Could you be in that area?
It would depend. If they had a specific behavior that they were trying, that they had already, what I would probably do, if they wanted me to teach the dog how to be a service dog, now I would probably refer that out, to be honest with you, because I don't even understand everything that's involved in training a service dog. Like, I know there are people who that's their area of specialty, and I don't want to disrespect that expertise by saying, oh yeah, I can do what you do. But if, like, I had a guy come to me, he had a veteran that had a guide dog, and someone else had trained the guide dog. The dog had been trained, and he had the dog in his possession for, you know, a few years, but the training had begun to slip, and the dog was no longer doing the job he was supposed to do, and he came in, and I'd never worked with a guide dog before, and these people actually had to pursue me a little bit, because I kept telling them I didn't think I was the guy for the job, but there was nobody else in the area who would even talk to them, so they kept pursuing them. Finally, I said, okay, well, come on in, we'll talk. So I had a meeting with them and kind of found out what the problem was, and I made some phone calls. I called some people I knew who had some experience with guide dogs, and they talked me through what the most common causes of those sort of the problems he was having were. And so I agreed to do my best pro bono to help the guy out. He's a veteran. I wanted to help him out. And, you know, he'd gotten in trouble. And we managed to work it out. But I called in a lot of resources to help me with that because I was out of my element for sure. But it was, again, it was a fun learning experience. And we did get the dog squared away. And so if there's something like that, if the dog has already been trained and the handler has been trained and there's something that's just not working right, I will usually take that sort of job on, especially if I can have access to somebody who's got the skill set to do it from scratch. But I wouldn't take a service dog on from the ground up. I think it would be disrespectful to the people who have spent their lives learning how to do it. And I certainly can't do as good a job as those people can. So...
Well, that's respectable, and I just gotta take time, jump up on a soapbox right here, and just to make note of what you just said. Here is a dog trainer who's been in the business for 23 years, a guy who goes around giving workshops to other dog trainers in certain techniques, and, you know, been doing dog work for a while, and you're saying, wow, for me, I think I would go get some help from somebody who actually does this rather than try to do it for the people. And we have folks that are so stubborn, so narcissistic, yeah, I used the word, that they are going to attempt to owner train with no prior dog experience, no prior dog training experience, and they're going to owner train without a trainer assist. And I'm just sitting over here hearing you say, you know what? I think I would refer that one out. And I can appreciate that as a service dog guy who came into service dog work from being a regular obedience dog trainer. You know, it's a different skill set, and you can teach the dog up to a point, but there's certain things that you need to teach that you should know how to teach. And watching a video or two is not always going to get that done for you. So I appreciate you saying that. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I hear what you're saying. I get upset when I'm in the airport and I see a dog with a service dog vest on that clearly doesn't know how to walk on a leash. I get very upset about that. I think my fear is that I think that the idea, the ADA allowing access for service dogs to all places, or service animals, I should say, I think that's awesome. I think it's great, and I think that law is fair and it needs to be protected. But the problem with it is that people are abusing it. People are bringing dogs out into the world that a lot of times there's fake service dogs, which don't even get me on that soapbox because that's something that really just gets me angry. But then the other thing is dogs who are not trained to any kind of standard, they're not good canine citizens even. They're pulling on the leash. Or I saw one guy literally dragging his service dog through the airport a few years ago. I don't know if it was a legitimate service dog or it was just some guy who bought a vest online because people do that. But it was all I could do not to go, you know, take that guy's dog away from him and say, you're not allowed to have this thing anymore, you know. But the problem is that that sort of behavior continues. If that sort of behavior continues the way it has been going, then the ADA is going to have to be changed, and then it's going to actually limit the people who are trying to do good work. It's going to limit their ability to get that work done, and it's going to make it harder for people who need service dogs to have service dogs. So I definitely don't want to contribute to that problem. My friends who do service dogs, I know what they're up against. I know what they're contending with, and I'm not going to be a source of frustration for them. I'm not going to be the guy who helped the dog get out there and get a vest on that wasn't ready for it and takes the rights away from other people. It's a big deal. It's a scary thing that's happening right now when you have people on the internet who are selling, you know, basically saying, you know, look, all you got to do is get your dog registered as an emotional support animal and you can move into any apartment you want with it. It's fraud. It should be criminal. I don't know if it is or not, but if it isn't, it should be. But the other side of that is the ADA, like, they're not allowed to ask you what your disability is. So there's a privacy issue. I don't want people who have a legitimate need for service dogs to have to reveal their disabilities to everybody that they, you know, so it's, if people would just do the right thing, we wouldn't be having this conversation. But people don't do the right thing. And that's the problem. So I feel you. I'm with you on that.
Yeah, I was about to say, yeah, you preaching to the choir here, and you turned and said that it was me. Hey, I got Chad on the show, and this is Chad talking. This ain't Doc talking. Doc's just a friendly old guy without an opinion. I'm just the media guy. I love when I get people on the show to say the things that I want to say. And, you know, you're a guest on the show, so we have to treat you right and have to let you say these things. And I really do. I appreciate your heart, and I appreciate your, you know, the thought that goes into what you're doing. And I definitely heard what you said. You have friends that are service dog trainers, and you see the frustration they go through, and you don't want to be part of that. That is cool.
Of course not.
I like that. That says something about you, Chad. It really does. Okay, let's see if I can get you in some more trouble since we done got you in a little trouble. Now, you go about and you do the workshops. Who would be your client in the workshops?
Well, you know, we most workshops we have a pretty nice mixture between dog owners and dog trainers. A lot of times local dog trainers will bring their clients with them to the workshops. So I steer away from a lot of jargon and technical talk. I try to keep everything on a more plain speaking level. I don't like it when trainers hide behind jargon. You know, when you're new in the business, you use a lot of technical terms because you feel like, I think that signifies to the client that you know a lot about what you do. But I'm well past that point in my development. You know, I'm just like, give me the leash and I'll show you what I can do. And that usually ends any questions about my qualifications. So when I teach a workshop, I like to keep it in plain language. I don't like to encourage the jargon. I think jargon is exclusionary. I think it creates a divide, not understanding. And I want to avoid that. So I can have somebody who's been training dogs for 50 years come to my workshop and say it's the best workshop she ever came to. And then I can have somebody who's a dog owner who's just trying to get some help with a problem walk away saying, wow, this was amazing, and not feel like they were being left behind in the dirt. So I really, really try to keep it accessible to anybody who's interested in dogs. But, you know, the average workshop is probably about 30% dog owners and 70% dog trainers, but all backgrounds, all walks of life. I don't do a whole lot that's controversial. I'm not a force free trainer. But I don't believe in labels either. So I don't call myself a balance trainer. I'm a dog trainer. I train dogs, and I will use a leash to give a correction if I feel like it's the best thing for the dog, or I might use a clicker if it's the best thing for the dog. I just get the dog trained. I'm not. So like it's very easy for someone to come to my workshops, even if they're like in a very strong camp, they have a strong modality of training that they love and they believe in. It's the only way to do it. There's very rarely that they're going to see something in my workshop that they're going to go, "Ooh, I would never do that." They might go, "I don't really like that," but they're not going to go, "Ooh, I would never do that." It's there's nothing that's that, because you know I've developed skills that allow me to do things in a non-aggressive, non-threatening way. And so you don't see the dogs getting shut down or being, you know, beat up on, so to speak. And so nobody's going to go walk away going, "Well, that guy was terrible," you know. So our dog trainers of all camps, the workshop that we just did this weekend, I did with my friend Sarah Fulcher, who is a positive-based trainer up in British Columbia, Canada. And the title of the workshop was Bridging the Gap. And it was really one of the main things we talked about was how the dog training world is too divided. We need to be learning from each other, not fighting with each other. And so she did a whole section on shaping and markers and you know, clickers and all this stuff. And then I'm out there doing my leash stuff. And, you know, so it was a really cool, really cool thing. And we had a lot of people who came away with a lot of better understanding of who the person sitting across the aisle, so to speak, is. Because you know what? We have more in common than we have in differences. We're all here. We all do what we do because we love dogs. We all want to help dogs. We might disagree about the best way to do it, but that's what we're here for. Like, we all get in this business, I hope, because we want to help dogs. You know, so it's everybody's welcome. Doc, I have no enemies in the dog world. I have no enemies in the dog training world. There are some people who think they're my enemies. But I don't have any enemies. That's on them.
Okay, you cleaned that one up before I had a chance to pull the sword in you. But okay, they think they enemy, but no, that's different. I like that. Let's see. Let's go back to when you were starting your business. And you were trying to brand your business, and you came up with Pack to Basics. Now, mm-hmm. as a branding tool, that's supposed to mean something. That's supposed to send a message. And it's supposed to get the attention of who would be your basic client. So mm-hmm. explain the name for me a little bit, and you know, draw me in with this name.
Okay, well, so first thing I got to say, because I started doing socialization, that was what it was for, was socialization. It seemed like a real clever play on words, right? And it's really, honestly, I didn't put that much thought into it when I came up with it. I was like, so this sounds cool. People will remember it. And we started putting the dogs together. And so it's got a good ring to it. It just felt good. But to be honest with you, I have at this point in my career, I actually don't like the term pack. I don't like people talking about dogs as packs anymore. So it's actually kind of a holdover. I'm not going to change it. I'm going to keep it. But you know, it does like, if you get to know me and my training in philosophy, you'll realize that I'm not a pack style trainer. I don't subscribe to the pack theory, at least not the way most people do. But the way I say it now is that let's get back to basics about what a pack actually is. Because a bunch of dogs together in a room are not a pack. It's a bunch of dogs together in a room. They're no more a pack than I'm family with the guy I sit next to on the airplane. We're just sharing space and trying to get through the social interaction. And don't get me wrong, pack is the correct term for a group of dogs. That is the correct term for a specific group of dogs, right? A pack is a unique social situation, like a family is. The pack is the correct term for that. The reason why I don't like the term is that there's a lot of baggage associated with it, because there's a lot of theories about what a pack is and how a pack operates that I just flat out disagree with. I don't think they're accurate. I think they're misleading and I think that they cause problems. So I spend a lot of time in my workshops debunking some of those myths, what I consider to be myths. I know a lot of people believe them to be very true, and I can respectfully disagree, but I disagree strongly nonetheless. The term is probably not the best. The name is probably not the best name for my workshops from now, for where I am in my life now, but, you know, it's a successful name. I'm not changing it, you know. You don't change the name of Coca-Cola just because you don't want it, like, just because it doesn't have cocaine in it anymore, you know. You just keep it going, so.
I get it. So, okay, so that's the thing on the pack. But the basic deal, mm-hmm. I think you probably still have some more of that in you. And talk about what importance the basics play in your business.
Well, okay, so for everything I do, if you want to be good at anything, if you want to be good at anything, whether you want to be good at playing football, you want to be good at playing guitar, you want to be good at cooking, you want to be good at dance, whatever it is that you got an aspiration to be good at, the fundamentals, the foundational skills are where greatness begins. And you can only be as great as your foundational skills allow you to be. So fundamentals, fundamentals, fundamentals. That is the core of greatness, in my opinion. And I want to be the best dog trainer I can be. I want to be the best dog trainer that my life, the access to knowledge that I have, my physical capabilities, and my experience can produce. I want to reach my fullest potential. And I find that focusing on basics, focusing on the simple, because the simple things, the further you get down the line, the more you find out the simple things aren't so simple, right? I'm going to go a little off topic now. You'll have to bear with me. But one of my hobbies is Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. And there's a guy in the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu world named Roger Gracie who won a few world championships a few years back. And he won the world championships there's a technique called a cross choke or an X choke. It's the first thing they teach you as a white belt. It's the first choke they teach you as a white belt. He won the world championships 2 years in a row, almost exclusively with that very first fundamental technique that you learn day one. He was choking out black belts with this single technique. And that's what fundamentals are. They knew what he was doing. Everybody knew what he was doing, but his technique was so good they couldn't stop it. And so I really believe in that if you have the basics strong, because the basics are about where you are in relation to the dog, how you're holding the leash, because you can't use a tool properly if you're holding it improperly, right? How you hold the leash, how you think of the dog, how you interact with the dog, how you apply pressure, how you release pressure, how you use your body to communicate, how you use your voice. Those are all fundamental things. But you put them together and you've got a real powerful, powerful message that you can get into that dog's head. And this is the amazing thing about communication. Just the idea of communication is that I got things in my brain, and my job is to get the things in my brain, the idea, the picture, the image I have in my brain into the brain of a dog and into a client, and get all of them talking together. all three of us having the same basic image that's coming from my brain. That's amazing that we can even do that. Like, if you think about it, that's an incredibly complex idea. And so the more we get onto simple, direct ideas, the easier it is for us to not get lost and mixed up in different worlds. You know, I study neuroscience as a hobby. Like, I have a book on my desk called Functional Neuroscience. It's a medical textbook. This is the sort of stuff I do because I believe that I want to understand everything I can about learning. And that's where the real science of learning is in the neuroscience. Like, we know what happens on the brain when it learns. It's amazing stuff. But I don't go into that with my clients. They don't need to know that. It's not going to help them succeed. It's going to help me figure out the exercises and the timing and the formulas they need. All I have to do is coach them on the timing. They don't need to know that. So my fundamentals are informed by a whole lot of deeper stuff, but it all comes down to how do I apply this knowledge to the basics? How do I apply this knowledge to the simplest thing I can do? How do I give the simplest instruction to my client? How do I give the simplest picture to the dog and get them to do the thing? And I can carry the weight of all that other complexity on my shoulders and distill it down into something that's very simple. I think it was Einstein said that the root of genius is being able to take something that's extremely complex and make it simple. That's what I try to do. I try to find the complexity and embrace it and become fluent enough in it that I can communicate it without a lot of complexity.
And that makes your fee that much, gives your fee that much more value, because they don't have to know the whys and the whats and the what for. All they have to know is, if I want this, then I do this, and then I get that. And they don't need to know why. They just need to know, hey, I worked all this out for you, and let me show you what's going to fix this. There's an easy fix to your problem. Here, let me show you this simple fix. Boom, boom, boom. Wow.
Yeah, they do need a little bit of why, though. Like, that's the other thing. This is one thing that I think that trainers miss a lot, is that we, in a commercial endeavor, right, you know, in a commercial endeavor, we're running a business, we tend to break the transaction into sales and then service. Right, the sales is when we got them on the phone, or we're doing the emails, or they're coming in for the interview. That's the sales. And then once we get their money, once we get the contract, once we start working the dog, now we're in the service. Right? I don't believe that. I believe we're always in sales and always in service. I don't believe the two are. I don't believe that sales and service are distinct parts of the process. I believe they go hand in hand. Because when I tell a client, I want you to, for example, if I would say, I want you to tether your dog. I want you to do umbilical cord training with your dog. And I say that to them, and I get pushback. They go, oh, I don't know about that. That sounds like a lot of frustration or whatever. I have to be able to sell them on that idea. That's my job at that point in time.
Yeah.
So a little bit of why. It's knowing where, how much why they need to buy into it and how much why overwhelms them, where that line is. That's the important thing. But I had a teacher once tell me that a good teacher has two roles that he must fulfill. The first is to, you know, disseminate accurate information in a way that the student can process it. And the second is the one that most people miss, is they got to motivate the student to apply that information. They have to inspire the student to do those things, to make the changes that information is about. And that's the part where I think a lot of trainers kind of miss it. You know, they fail to motivate. And the why is a great motivator if you can make it make sense to them. I use a lot of metaphor, though. I use a lot of analogies. And that helps a lot, too.
Okay.
If I can relate it to...
Go ahead.
But I just say, if I can relate it to something that they already see in life, and they go, oh, yeah, I never thought of it that way before.
There you go. That's building the bridge. That's that learning bridge.
Yeah.
Now,
yep.
You just gave a good segue for me giving you this bit of time. That first, let me paint the picture for you real well. Your audience is folks who are in the service dog community, and I just realized I let you get away with something that normally I would have bit on, but you did it so smooth, and as part of your conversation, it just got through, and that's okay. But you're dug into the service dog community, whether they're owner trainers, program execs, people who work for a program, volunteer for a program, dog trainers, service dogs trainers, behaviorists, people who handle the service dogs, and all the different people that might service anybody in that group. That's your audience that you're speaking to. And knowing that, take a few minutes and speak your heart, speak your mind to these people, whatever that thing is that you're passionate about, whatever that thing is that, you know, when I say service dog makes your heart go wherever it goes, or when I say dog makes you, you know, get excited about things. Speak to the audience on whatever that is that's in your heart, in your head.
All right, so I think for me, dogs are an essential part of my life. Like, I can't imagine living without dogs. I love dogs. I've always loved dogs ever since I was a kid, ever since I can remember. When I was younger and my parents wouldn't let me have a dog, I would beg them every day, can we get a dog, can we get a dog, can we get a dog? Dogs give me something that nothing else in the world does. And it doesn't care. I don't care if the dog is aggressive, fearful, spiteful, whatever. I love them all. I don't always like them all, but I always love them all. And I always feel this strong desire to help them. I do what I do because I want to help dogs. And what is so cool about the service dog industry is that this gives an opportunity for dogs to help people. Dogs get to give back to us some. And they always do. Like, every dog helps people. In a sense, this gets maybe upset some people, but in a sense, every dog is a service dog because they all give us something if we let them. But in your world and what you're doing, these dogs get to give back more. They get to do something even bigger than just be our confidants and our comforts and our companions and our friends. They get to enrich the lives of people in a way, give them access to things that they wouldn't have otherwise, to a lifestyle that they maybe couldn't have otherwise. And that is unbelievable. When I was a kid, I was fascinated by guide dogs. Like, that was the thing. Like, we're the first service dogs, were the guide dogs, right? And when I was a kid and I'd see, you know, somebody in a TV show with a guide dog, the idea that you could teach a dog to lead a blind person through the streets and, you know, not let them get hit by cars and then you start looking at the complexities of a guide dog. You know, like, they can't steer them under low-hanging branches, the thing a dog would never think about to look for on his own. And then the idea of, you know, of selective disobedience. I know you want to go forward, but it's a bad idea. All of these things are so amazing, and they just such a depth to what dogs are capable of. You know, it's just, it humbles me. It humbles me. And so it's amazing that dogs have this capacity, and I'm so honored to work with them. But I'm going to say this, and I remember somebody told me something many years ago. An Irish Wolfhound breeder down in Texas told me this many years ago. He said, the highest calling a dog can have is as a pet. And I got indignant. I said, no, because, again, I was fascinated by guide dogs. I said, no, I got to disagree with you. A guide dog, that's amazing, right? And he told me to look it up. And I looked it up at the time. I haven't looked it up since then. But he goes, look at what happens when people have guide dogs who pass away. Most of them don't get a new dog right away. Most of them wait a couple of years before they replace that dog, because to them, the dog's a family member. It's not a tool. And so the thing that dog gave, excuse me, I'm choking up a bit here. The thing that dog gave to that person was not the things I was just talking about. It wasn't the ability to go move through the street freely. It was more than that. That dog was his friend. That dog was his companion. That dog was his life partner in a way. And when that goes away, it's not just to replace it with another dog. The dogs aren't tools. They're not just, they give us their hearts, not just our service. And that's what I would say to anybody who's working with service dogs is never forget that. But these dogs are giving you their heart. It's not just the behaviors. It's not just the help. It's not just the, you know, the turning on the light switch or picking up the things off the floor or alerting when the blood sugar goes too low. Those are all valuable, important, and it's amazing. But those dogs sacrifice themselves so that we can have better lives, so that people who need them can have better lives. And never forget that. Never take that for granted. Because it's amazing. It's amazing. And you should always be appreciative of that.
Well, that's pretty, pretty strong. That's pretty strong. And on that one, yeah, you may be preaching to the choir. But, you know, there's some people that are new to service dogs that are new to dogs. And they don't know how deeply that bond's going to get. And they really don't know. And so you have just alerted some folks. And I believe you get somebody's attention. Now, say somebody wanted to reach out to you and they are in your area. And they want to reach out to you. They want to talk to you more about your Back to Basics, your training and behavioral business. Give us some ways that they can contact you.
They can find me on my website, backtobasics.net, if they want to know about workshops. See my blog. They can also follow Back to Basics on Facebook. If they want to contact me about a dog they want to train, they can give me a call here at the Paw Canine Campus in Geneva, Illinois, 630-232-8663. And if it's okay, could I mention my podcast?
Yeah.
Yeah, I have a podcast with my friend Jay Jack in Maine. He's a pit bull guy. It's called Dog Training Conversations. And you can find that on iTunes or other podcast apps. So that's it.
Did you get the name of the podcast?
Yeah, it's called Dog Training Conversations.
Okay. All right. Well, now they know how to reach you if they want to reach you. They know how to get at you. And they know why they should. And let's see. I'm giving you that time. Now, in a second, I'm going to give you a chance to give some closing words. But in the meantime, let me say, folks, Chad loves doing question and answer. So if you have a question or comment that you'd like to pose to Chad, please call 646-668-2499. Once you call the number and you're into the switchboard, press the number 1 on your phone, and that'll let me know that you have a question or comment that you have for Chad. Now, you got about a minute or so to do that. If you don't call within that minute, I've got to let you go. So make it quick, and if, you know, calls stack up, that's okay. I know when you call. And I'll just get you in, you know, in the time of your call. So, Chad, in the meantime, go ahead and make some closing remarks. Thank the people, buy the people, whatever you do with the people. And we'll see if anybody calls in.
Closing remarks. Goes back to my message. It's always my main thing is do what's best for the dog in all situations. Whatever, my priority is to do what's right for the dog. So if you have a dog problem, I always tell people your dog has a problem. If I solve your dog's problem, I'll solve your problem. I can probably solve your problem without solving your dog's problem, but that's not how I work. I want to solve your dog's problem. I'm here for the dog. You pay the check. You write the check, but I work for the dog. and that's the way I do business. It's the way I believe. And I think the best trainers in the world think that way too. So we dogs didn't ask to be, well, they kind of did. We brought dogs into a civilization that they cannot possibly understand the complexity of. I miss most of it most of the time, so I know they can't get it. And we have an obligation to keep them safe, which means we train them. We teach them how to be good citizens. We teach them how to make good decisions. We teach them how to behave. And that's what I do. That's my job. That's what I do. I'm honored to be allowed to do this for a living, and not go hungry in the process. And that's, my message is always respect the dogs, respect them for what they are, for who they are. They're not objects. They're not servants. They're not lesser beings. They're different beings. And I'm amazed by them every day. And I'm so happy to get to help them. Don't take it for granted. Just don't. Be in awe every day of your dog. Every day. Every day look at your dog and go, I'm happy you're my friend. I'm glad you're my friend. If you do that, you'll make good choices, I think.
Well, there we have it. Spoken from Chad Mackin, who is obviously an advocate for dogs. And anybody that's in the dog world, if you don't really love the dog, for me, I say you should get out of this world. Too many people are just making money off of dogs, and they care nothing about the dog. Well, here's a guy that is obvious that he cares about the dogs. And so, Chad, I don't want to disappoint you, but nobody's calling in to ask you any questions. But I want to thank you for being on the show. And thank you for sharing with us. And I want to thank my audience for listening and supporting the show. And folks, come back tomorrow when we'll have another exciting guest telling some more stories that are presumably true. And we'll get together again on tomorrow, same time, same place. If you need Chad's work, please give him a call. If you're in his area over there in Illinois, give him a call. Or if you happen to be a trainer and you heard something interesting and you want to do business with him, check out the website. And maybe you can bring him into your organization or whatnot and see what he can teach and show you to help make what you do a little easier, a little better, and take it to the next level. As for me, it'd be cool just to have him in to talk to my people just about loving and appreciating a dog as another living, breathing creature. And then whatever else we can learn on top of that, that'd be real cool. But we're going to land this thing, and we're going to say, hey, please actually press the follow button on this episode. There, it's right there. If you press the link to get in, then you can press follow right there on the same place where the link brings you into the show. Please press follow. It lets us know that you're out there, and it lets you know what shows are coming up next and when and who's going to be the guest. And usually the topic of conversation. So if you'll do that, I sure appreciate it. Having said that, we love you. Love your dog. And your dog will love you right back. Take care until the next time. So long.